live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island. It's Cofield and Company.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Partying.
Yeah, 5 o'clock hour, Cofield, Alex White, Christopher helping us out down here at Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Griffin back in the Findlay Toyota Studios. Shedeur Sanders in the biggest preseason game in the history of the NFL, the most hyped one, at least. I don't know what the ratings will be, but because of talk shows like ours and, more importantly, on TV where they embrace debate, Shedeur Sanders has been a megastar going into this game, with some people suggesting that the Browns were effing him over by giving him a start in the game. So we'll play more reaction along those lines in a couple of minutes, but Shedeur's out to a decent start. He's 6 of 11. He threw a touchdown pass to Caden Davis, a 9-yard touchdown pass for the game. He's thrown for 44 yards, had a couple of bad throws, a lot of pressure in his face early. I will tell you, he tried on one play with pressure up the middle to start running backwards and kind of go back and forth turning. And, like, bro, this ain't college anymore. Like, yeah. He got away with that, where you can lengthen a play by going back 20 yards. NFL players are so much faster. And Shedeur is a pretty good athlete, and he's got some escapability, but not at this level, not where you're going to go back 20 yards and escape. So that got ugly.
I feel like we saw Jaden Daniels do a little bit of that last year, but...
Well, Jaden Daniels is also a lot more evasive.
Yeah.
I think. He's a much better runner. I wouldn't know this off the top of my head. What did he rush for last year? Like over 600?
Probably.
My guess is Shedeur will be one of those guys who's right around like maybe 50 yards for the season.
Really?
Yeah, I don't see them doing design runs with Shedeur Sanders. I don't think that's going to happen. Now, Jaden Daniels is a legit threat on the ground.
Yes.
He's dangerous. But really, I mean, there aren't many quarterbacks. Hell, Lamar Jackson is probably the best runner in the NFL at the quarterback position, maybe the best of all time. You know, even Lamar should not be going, dipsy-doo back and forth.
No, absolutely not.
I was trying to find that number on Jaden Daniels a year ago. Come on now, rushing numbers.
Yeah.
I wish I knew these things off the top of my head, but I can't remember. Hey, you know what? I was wrong. A lot lower. Nope, that's postseason. I was like, only 135 yards. I thought he killed it last year. Yeah, he was pretty good. 891 yards.
Wow.
6 yards a carry, 6 touchdowns. So, I mean, he's an elite runner. You're talking 900 yards. He's amazing. So, anyway,
Shedeur
should not
like
be trying to do that.
He learned that kind of quickly, too, that he couldn't do that anymore.
Don't go backwards.
Yes.
I mean, it's already dangerous enough to kind of go, outside. Like, you better be able to turn the corner pretty quickly. You're going to be dealing with 5 and 10 and 15-yard losses if you try to go to the side to evade pressure. So
that's another reason, really quick, because before the break I was talking about the Titans, but that I'm intrigued by Cam Ward, because this feels so similar, where all the hate on Caleb Williams and people almost like rooting for him to fail, right, with Chicago, and now all the attention is on Sanders and nobody even talks about the number one pick overall.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, not that Jaden Daniels was number one overall, but still, he like flew under the radar.
He was right there,
and then was right there, and yeah.
He was the number two, and Caleb Williams was also more of a, just like Shedeur is more of a lightning rod, and in the case of Jaden Daniels, wasn't a massive personality, and Cam Ward is not a massive personality. When you come down here to the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, great spot to hang out, eat, watch the games, but if you want to step it up a little bit, go over to Phil's Steakhouse, great spot, great items on an eclectic menu like the 12-ounce center cut filet, Australian Wagyu Picana, lobster and crab Diablo pasta, wild mushrooms and sweet cherry broccolini as a side. Phil's, perfect spot for a sophisticated meal. You want to visit Treasure Island, do it soon. Not that they're going to close, but, you know, do it soon, man. Enjoy yourself down here, free parking, and they have a lot to offer in the experience, including the Cove, back by Mystere, and Gillies is a legend here up on the Strip. Alex White, Steve Cofield, tracking the most important preseason football game in the history of the NFL. 7-7 game, 7 minutes left. Shedeur with a mixed bag there. Nice completion over the middle and then threw in a double coverage. Two plays later, almost got intercepted, but the Browns still have the ball, are at their own 34-yard line. All right, let's talk some baseball, a little bit of UNLV football, as Matt Nevert's getting ready for a game with the Aviators in Salt Lake. Matt, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Cofield, Alex, happy to be on with you. It's a beautiful night here in the southwest suburbs.
Okay, I have a question for you. I want a prediction. They're doing Kobe Bryant bobblehead night tonight in L.A. at the Dodgers game. It's a sweet-looking bobblehead. It would make a wonderful gift for someone I know. I texted your father, Tim, voice of the Dodgers, and I said $200 for the bobblehead. What do you think he says?
I only because I know that he was offered more than double that for a Shohei Ohtani bobblehead earlier this year, and he declined. I'm going to guess he says no to that one, but you never know.
I probably didn't help my cause by announcing it on the air.
Of course.
Kind of out of him.
I guess he, earlier in the year when they gave away the Ohtani bobblehead, he was walking to his car post-game, and somebody walked up with $500 cash and offered it to him. And he said, no, he told me he thinks it'll probably be worth more in the future, but who knows?
Alex, what did I say?
You said it was probably going to be a no, but you had to try.
Yep. I mean, 200 is kind of crazy. I don't want to go higher than that. And it also sounds like, from what you just said, he's not going to sell it. Damn it.
He's not
such a cool bobblehead, though. Such a cool bobblehead. Well, it's actually what? That, yeah. All the memorabilia that I sell, you know me so well. Okay, let's talk about the A's this week. First of all, they had some need for middle infield help with Jacob Wilson going down. What do you think about what's happening right now at shortstop with the A's?
It's interesting. You see guys like Max Schumann thrown out there, and it is kind of an open spot right now. They've got some really good middle infield depth in the system. I think Darryl Hernandez has a real chance to kind of stick there. He's a guy who doesn't strike out often, if ever. A ton of walks. I know he's already taken a couple today. He's a really disciplined bat, so I think that both on and off the field, he's been one of my favorite guys to handle with the Aviators here over the last couple of years. I think in the meantime, he's a great guy that can stick at that shortstop spot. Obviously, looking ahead to the future a couple years down the line, they've got Leo DeVries, the top prospect in the system. Here in Vegas, Uribe Alonjelis has been really good. Zach Geloff could come back into the fold at second base as well. So they got a little bit of depth. It's just a matter of getting Jacob Wilson back healthy into the fold and, you know, increasing what's already been a pretty good run for them as of late. They've had kind of a soft schedule over the last week or two. They took care of business, taking 2 out of 3 in Washington. And, you know, they're in action right now against the Orioles. They're trailing 3-0 in the fourth, but this is a team that has a penchant for the long ball. So really, as long as they're not down like 8-9 runs, they've got a chance to come back every game.
From talking to people around the organization, where are they on Colby Thomas in terms of needing any more AAA time? Because it's kind of complicated right now. He had a home run last night. You kind of feel like a guy who's playing AAA baseball was blowing up. If he's not going to play at the major league level, why have him up there? But are they convinced, like, that's enough? The seasoning is done. Let's keep him up in the majors, even if he isn't playing every day.
I mean, it's a really tough balance to strike, kind of like you had mentioned. You know, he has seen and done everything he's needed to see and do at the AAA level. He was the AAA leader in extra base hits and total bases at the time of his call-up. And generally speaking, I am a fan of kind of what you had alluded to. If you're not going to get regular at-bats, I think some guys would rather be at AAA. But for Colby Thomas, he's kind of at that level where I think he's better to get some seasoning in the big leagues. And the outfield right now is a position of strength with Lawrence Butler, Denzel Clark coming back. Obviously, Carlos Cortez and two of the better Aviators over the last couple of years. And then, of course, the all-star Brent Rooker. They've got a ton of outfield depth right now, so it is a really tough position to crack as far as playing at the major league level. And I think that Colby is a guy who needs to learn to make these adjustments on the fly. You know, one thing we've noted over the last year and a half or so that we got to look at him was that there wasn't a lot of adjustments, especially when he gets to two strikes. He swings big, he swings hard, he plays everything 100% all the time, which is 99% of the time a good thing, but those adjustments get that much harder once you get to the big leagues, and really the only way to learn how to do that is to get those big league reps.
Matt, there's an interesting article that says Jacob Lopez has the tools to be a Cy Young contender. We definitely saw him with the Aviators. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, from the left side, he gives you a really good look. And again, he doesn't walk a lot of guys. 10 strikeouts, no walks last night. And the only reason he didn't get through eight innings is because he had that 17-pitch war with two outs in the air, with one out, rather, in the eighth inning against Nate Lowe. If he continues to progress the way that he has, I don't see any reason why he couldn't be a number one starter and a potential Cy Young candidate. But the A's right now trying to kind of figure out their identity as far as that pitching staff and having more guys to anchor it, especially with J.T. Sears getting shipped off to the Padres. Every left-hander they can take, they will get, or they can get, they will take. And, yeah, Jake Lopez, another guy, kind of did everything he needed to do at the AAA level, and he's probably better served to get those big league reps, and he's really taken advantage.
Were you surprised, by the way, the Padres are handling J.P. Sears?
Yes, to be quite frank. You know, the Yankees traded for a guy, sent him down. J.P. Sears, I was more expecting them to bump him to the bullpen, give them another left-handed option there. Very surprised that they optioned him down to El Paso in AAA. We'll see. I mean, the Padres and A.J. Preller running things, they like to make moves just to make moves, it feels like sometimes, especially every trade deadline. We'll see. I mean, they've got a really, really tough uphill climb trying to surpass the Dodgers, and once they get to the playoffs, trying to beat the defending world champions. So we'll see, but yeah, I don't know. Pitching's not really even a strength for them, so I was kind of very surprised to see that.
Well, let's talk about that series. The Pod Squad taking on the Red Sox. That game will start up here at 6:40. It's Walker Buehler, who's been just okay, against Nick Pivetta. Big series for both teams, and kind of amazing right now that while the Yankees are struggling, that the Red Sox are actually 12 games above 500 to keep appearing to give up and go with the youth movement, and they keep winning.
Yeah, go figure. I mean, when they sent down Christian Campbell, their top prospect at the time, I think it really surprised a lot of people, and he's been hitting the cover off the ball in AAA Worcester, so I don't think it's going to be too much longer before we see him get back to the big league level. You know, a lot of excitement with Roman Anthony, who they just locked up for a long time. Marcelo Mayer as well, another guy who's a top prospect for them, who's going to get up and really stick with the club. But yeah, this Red Sox team, plucky. And I think Garrett Crochet has a legitimate chance to surpass Tarik Skubal in Cy Young odds. And, you know, as you had mentioned, Walker Buehler, kind of just statistically a 6-6 record, but he's been one of those guys that's been a real energy piece. And I think that's one of the more underrated acquisitions in Major League Baseball this year, especially for a guy that was coming off of an injury. He's the kind of clubhouse leader that guys like Crochet, guys like the newly acquired Dustin May, and some other young guns like Brian Bayo in that starting rotation can look up to and really take after with his 100-mile-an-hour fastball when he's at his best.
Alex White, Steve Cofield, TI Vegas. We're hanging out at Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, the voice of baseball in Las Vegas. Matt Nevert is with us. Okay, Astros and Yankees right now, fourth inning. Astros up 2-0 on New York. And Alex and I were kind of joking off the air about the beginning of the new era of the bullpen for the Yankees. That did not work out well. I mean, I don't know what I'm saying. I mean, the closer situation, it seems like Devin Williams is cooked. He needs to be reduced in his role. Bednar closed out a game the other day. They've got Doval they just brought over. They've had some other guys. Luke Weaver has been effective. They have to change things up at the closer spot, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any way you can stick with Devin Williams. That number that got shared around the other day, he's already given up more runs this year than in the previous two seasons combined. You know, he's a guy who got the Yankees to change that facial hair policy, and look at what they get, right? I know Steinbrenner Sr. is rolling over in his grave seeing him go out there and get that policy changed just to stink it up so far this year. And out of those guys, I think Luke Weaver with the Yankees has been the most effective. Now, David Bednar in his last however many outings with the Pirates was tremendous. Camilo Duvall is one of the most deceptive relief arms in all of Major League Baseball, closer or otherwise. So they've got the talent. It's just about kind of putting it together, and it seems like it's more the mental side, really, for that entire clubhouse. And, you know, growing up an ardent Red Sox fan, nothing makes me happier than seeing the Yankees go down and struggle. And Aaron Boone, one of my least favorite players since the 2003 ALCS when he hit the home run off of Tim Wakefield. So it brings me a slight amount of pleasure to see him really, really struggling at the helm. And the question becomes, hey, if his team makes the playoffs, gets bounced in the first or second round, what do they do with Booney? He's got one more year on his deal. He's really struggling to make the correct decisions when it comes to that closer spot, and that may be his undoing despite whether they make the playoffs or not.
Matt Nevert's with us. He's also the voice of UNLV. Football mentions on a couple of fronts. First of all, I don't know how much you've seen of the honors that Alex Orji is getting nominated for the Walter Camp. He was on a list early in the week, ESPN's 40 most important players in college football. originally it only mentioned Orji, and then I think someone got to them and they're like, he's not the starting quarterback for sure yet. So they included a mention about Anthony Calandria. But Orji getting a lot of the honors. I think Calandria had the lead coming into the fall. I think Orji is catching up to him. That quarterback position is going to be really interesting for the Rebels.
Absolutely. And it's one of those situations where, I don't know, you've been at practice more than I have just with my travels with the Aviators, but it seems like whoever is going to take the starting snaps is going to be in a really good system. They're going to be set up for success with the way that they've structured this line, with the way they've structured both the running back and wide receivers rooms, and with the liberties that are going to be afforded to the quarterback in this unique Dan Mullen spread offense. So I think Orji, with his almost professionalism and his experience and his national championship resume at Michigan, you know, may all of a sudden have an inside edge. I think a lot of people just handed the job to Anthony Calandria because of his starting experience at Virginia going into camp. But, you know, by all accounts, Orji has been the guy that's taking care of the ball a little bit better. I think he may have a higher ceiling than Calandria, but it remains to be seen how their unique skill sets are going to mesh in this offense. And I do think it was funny that most important players, they basically just said, whoever starts a quarterback for UNLV is going to be the 40th in the country. I don't think that's been a problem that the Rebels have ever had, worrying about their starting quarterback being one of the top 40 players in all of college football. I mean, I'm going to be really excited when I get out of there to, next week to get a chance to practice, kind of to see where this offense is now that they're in week two, week three, even week four in pads and with the full team. I'll be really interested to see who gets the majority of the first team reps, because this is about the time as we get into game prep for August 23rd when we're going to see the ones start to get a lot more reps.
Matt, do me a favor. I'm always asking for favors, but I never really ask for any of these giveaways from the Aviators. Give it like 4 days, a little nudge to Tim about this bobblehead thing, this Kobe bobblehead. I need some help.
I got you. I'll see. Is it 8 or is it 24 on the bobblehead?
24.
Fitting. Yeah. No. I'll see what I can do. I'll put in a word with the old man.
Aviators coming up in the next homestand. What do we got going on?
They're taking on the Tacoma Rainiers, who, if the season ended today, would be the second half champions, taking on the Aviators in the PCL Championship Series. So it's going to be, you know, a really good, exciting series between two of the top teams, not only in the PCL, but in all of AAA. As always, promotional items as we go throughout the weekend. 90s night on Thursday should be a really fun one with a specialty jersey. Looks like those water cups from the 90s with that cool design. The Aviators will be the Cone Jesters, the second in the What If Night series throughout the year. Bright hazmat vest jerseys. I want to see a guy go with no undershirt, a la Derek Dietrich or Ted Kluski. Fireworks after Friday's game as well. And then probably my favorite of the weekend, the lunch cooler giveaway on Saturday. We're going back to school, and I'll use it for water out on the golf course. So it should be a really, really good weekend between the two top teams right now in the Pacific Coast League.
I feel like if Chuck or even Jim Gemma were going to come through with a big home run, maybe getting like Tiffany Amber Thiessen out there on Thursday night would be dynamite.
Yeah,
not trying to be creepy, but, you know, she was kind of good.
Hey, that's... Yeah, no, Jim Gemma does a great job of booking just about every national anthem, and if you're somebody in the music scene in Vegas, he knows you, and he's going to try to book you, so I wouldn't be surprised.
All right, Matt, have fun on the road, and we'll see you when you're back in town.
Awesome, looking forward to it. I'll see you at practice next week.
There he is, Matt Neverett, voice of baseball in Las Vegas, and you're going to hear him as one of the hosts of the Dan Mullen radio show, which is actually debuting sooner than later, as August 20th is the first coach's show. That'll be at Flamingo and 215 of the Parkway Tavern, as we'll get you ready for the opener against Idaho State. Again, UNLV opens August 23rd.
Week zero. Love it.
Week zero. I might have the date wrong on the first coach's show. I'll get you an update during the break because the schedule has changed a little bit. But Mullen show is going to be pretty much 98% of the time during the season at that Parkway location at Flamingo and 215. So early on, they always like to have, really throughout the season, but early on, big support, get fired up, usually great prizes, including a lot of tickets given away for the games. All right, on the way back, we'll get you an update on what's going on here with Shedeur Sanders and the Browns and the Panthers, and more of that narrative about Shedeur Sanders somehow going into this one was being screwed over, being given a start, and a lot more on the Raiders last night, a tie game against the Seahawks, much to break down.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Hey, is that new?
Cofield and Company back here. We'll get you an update on the Browns and Shedeur Sanders. He's the starting quarterback for the Browns. He looks unbelievable. The rest of the NFL completely effed this up. I'll tell you what I mean in just a couple minutes. Giveaway time, 364-1100, 364-1100. Caller 6 and 7, multiple giveaways, 6 and 7. Two tickets to go check out the Front Row Card Show at the Rio, August 16th and 17th. 550 tables of cards, comics, and collectibles. You can get your tickets at Front Row Card Show. Hey, Griffin, can you do me a favor? Is that an actual address that they're supposed to go to where they can get the tickets? Can you text our promotions guy so we can get the actual address to get the tickets? Because I've tried to read this 2 days in a row, and the copy sucks. Caller 6 and 7. 364-1100, 364-1100. I normally don't do that, but I'm irked. I think I'm wrong on Shedeur Sanders. He is unbelievable. I'm kidding. That's not the reason I did it. Shedeur just threw another touchdown pass to Davis. Cleveland leads 14-7. My God, this is going to make for so much fun talk next week. Who do the Browns play next?
Shedeur
Sanders better play the entire game. Why is Flacco playing at all? Get Kenny Pickett the hell out of there. Trade him. Dylan Gabriel cut. Shedeur, baby. Shedeur. People are going to go nuts.
Yeah, but it is funny that they set it up with the excuses beforehand just in case, and now you don't.
He overcame all of these obstacles. How is he doing this? He does look solid at times. I will tell you, we were getting on him for a play early in the first quarter where he tried to run backwards, you know, back and forth, got back like 22 yards, got rid of the ball, didn't get sacked. He actually did it again in the second quarter. He went back, and he went back to his left. He got caught on that side of the field, kind of dipsy-dude his way out, ran all the way across the field as he's looking down the field, kind of pump-faking behind the line, and then got out of bounds, got back to the line of scrimmage for like a one-yard gain. I still say that is... Stop doing that.
Yeah.
Don't put that on tape. People are going to be ready.
Yes.
I'm fired up, though. I love stories like this. And by the way, I've been critical of the way he's being covered. I hope Shedeur Sanders works out. I hope the Browns get a franchise quarterback. I don't know that we've seen what we need to say or need to see to say that, but that's not going to mean a hill of beans to talking heads around the NFL. Ooh, next week. At the Eagles. Can you imagine the reaction when the Browns go to what is kind of the norm now in game two of the preseason, which is the starting quarterback is going to log plays.
Right.
If Kenny Pickett is healthy, he's going to need to be on the field, and Shedeur Sanders may only play in the fourth quarter, or they only give, if Dylan Gabriel's healthy too, they only give Gabriel and Shedeur a quarter apiece. Can you imagine the mental meltdown when Shedeur has limited time next week after, look at what he did this week?
Well, and then the difference between Carolina Panthers and the Eagles on defense that...
You would, again, if you're going to play more starters in their get-ready game in game number two of the preseason, yes, the Eagles... defense will probably play more early. So, in a way, you'd actually be saving Shedeur Sanders from that and let Flacco get the time and let Pickett get the time. But
that's what I mean. So then if they aren't set up for success, and then it's going to be another storyline of how good Shedeur looked. But
I'm glad you're picking up on the lunacy of all of this. No matter what happens, the Shedeur backers are going to have some excuse as to, you know, he's getting screwed over. Getting the start in this game, he's looked good. He's had moments where he's looked good, so it worked out. He overcame the obstacles. There's no obstacles. But what a story to follow. It really is crazy, the whole freaking thing.
Well, he didn't ask for any of this, right?
I saw someone make the point the other day that, like, while everyone's turned this, you know, that it was a story before the draft, during, after, it was like freaking lava flowing everywhere of anger about Shedeur Sanders slipping to the fifth round. Lots of hype in camp. Watching camp way too closely in terms of grading interceptions and passes, and it's freaking training camp. while all that's gone down, Shadur really hasn't said much.
No.
He's actually been kind of quiet and playing the role that he should. I believe that Shadur Sanders genuinely is kind of a quiet kid. I think when the boisterous stuff comes out, especially in games, when it was at Colorado, it was because of his dad. And I'm not ripping Deion. Deion's just a different personality. He's always been larger than life.
Right. Definitely has been. But no, I think he's handled all of this very well. And I'm sure it was quite humbling, dropping. And now you got to just put your head down and work hard.
Raiders last night. Yes, Griffin?
Sorry. Handling things back here. But were we talking just now about Shadur and kind of how he's been reacting, how he's kind of handled everything?
Yeah.
Because I saw a funny little clip today about with him walking into the stadium, having a buddy carrying a scythe like he's death himself right next to him while he's walking out.
I didn't see that one.
Blasting his own theme song that he made back in Colorado. What is it? Perfect Timing? I don't know what the name of that freaking song is, but man, I'm not saying he's immature, but I'm just saying the way this kid rocks, the way he rolls, it's crazy, man. It's wild.
All right, you might have got me on this one.
Got us.
Are we going to go with Scythe or Sith? What do we think, Alex? The Angel of Death. I think it's Sith. I think, but I'm oftentimes wrong on this. I thought it was a GIF. Is it a GIF? Which one is it? Someone give me some answers, please. Now I just want to search for Sith. Let me see if I can find this.
Scythe sounds cooler.
Will it be the most popular Sith reference or Scythe? It is actually the number one story.
Jeez.
Is that real?
I feel out of touch now that Griffin just schooled us.
You sure that's a Scythe? What? Are you sure? Yeah, I guess it is.
I don't think it's a real Scythe, but I think it's supposed to look like one. Honestly, they probably went down to Spirit Halloween if there's one open already at this point and got themselves
there. There is. Actually, you missed that story. We had one of our big box furniture stores actually closed, and it's being replaced by one of the Halloween stores. And I've seen people griping already that Halloween stores are popping up.
Why?
Spirit of Halloween. We'll give them the free pop. Already popping up.
Stop griping about it. Spooky season's around the corner. That means football season's as well. Like, what are you so upset about? I'd rather see that than Christmas stuff getting put up too early.
Well, I disagree on that. I'd rather see Christmas. But I do. I like the Halloween stores popping up because it's a reminder to me to not wait until the last week, which I always do, and then I have no costume or a really crappy costume. Yeah, the tweet says, why the hell is Shador's buddy holding a... I know I'm right, but I'm going to go with Griffin's pronunciation, the scythe. Yeah, he does have an entourage. So he's got a guy holding that weapon of sorts. He's got one cameraman with a really bright light. Why he's behind him, I don't know. And, of course, this is already getting massive social media attention because people are pissed off that he walked in with a cameraman. And they're calling it an entourage. Oh, speaker. And you're right. You're right about the music. There was a speaker blasting his own music. Okay, I take it all back.
Me too.
I meant at camp talking football. He hasn't been starting the pot talking football. I can't win on this one. Like, I try to bring some common sense to football analysis and what happens in practice. It doesn't mean I'm not into Shadur Sanders succeeding. And then I try to back him, and then he shows up. You know, his buddy shows up with some sort of medieval weapon.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't know what I'm supposed to say anymore. It's very weird. Sanders, 11-18, 103 yards, 2 touchdowns, 4 carries for 18 yards. He's got the job. Probably not. But this is good. It's good for him. Raiders game last night, tie game, 23s. You didn't watch the end of the game?
I didn't, no.
Griffin, did you watch the end of the game?
Ooh, yes, I did.
Do you have the Seattle TV call?
Gets up, and Jalen Gaines blocks that kick. This game, Mike Robb, is going to end much to Pete Carroll's chagrin.
Yeah.
In a tie.
Coach Carroll's like, you ruined my perfect night. I almost had it.
So that was and Kate Scott, who, don't be a jerk. Referee's got to be heard there. No. She had a good call there, and they laughed at the end because they showed on camera a grimacing Pete Carroll. You know, that whole excited moment where you're like, oh, the kick's going to go through, and then immediately Pete saw that it got blocked. Ah, damn it. So heartbreaking for Pete Carroll. I will tell you, we're around someone who needed the tie.
Wow.
Kind of.
Yeah, you got to tell us this sports betting story.
So I've got a group of friends coming in. I mean, based on when I actually work with them, like three friends. I think the rest hate me still. But good old Sports Fan Radio Network, where JTTB started, JT the Brick, and many other radio people cut their teeth in the 90s at, and the network at the time was on probably somewhere between 50 and 150 stations. ESPN Radio did not exist until later in the existence of this Sports Fan Radio Network. Fox did not exist. There was a place called One-on-One. They had a bunch of affiliates. But, you know, we were one of the places that were kind of the filler programming and midday programming for big and small stations. And we're meeting out here for a little reunion. Pretty good turnout. Probably like 15 to 20 people are going to be coming out. They're already here in Vegas. And so one of the guys' names is John. John was a producer. He produced the Pete Rose Show back probably like 94, 95. Pete Rose had a national show. Dave Koken did it with him many times, right? Rest in peace, Dave Koken, or my old partner, old DC and the Sunshine Man. I can't remember all the name of the shows that we've done. DC and the Sunshine Man show. So John lives in Pittsburgh. He hit the ground. And he's like, I got to bet something, right? I don't remember all the elements of the bet, so I'm going to try to pull it up here. But he had a 14 parlay. The fourth part of the parlay was Seattle moneyline. I mean, it's 16-3 in the third quarter.
Right.
He's in, baby.
Yeah.
And then, well, it slowly started to disintegrate. And you know what's funny? I'm not going to be able to find... He sent the ticket on a text thread, but the problem on this text thread is that this guy, John, if there are 150 messages, he sent 125 of them. He won't stop texting. So, I mean, it is like, it's just unbelievable. But his ticket, the last part of that parlay, was Seattle money line. I know he had Paul Skeens over 7.5 strikeouts. He got 8. And a couple other money lines. Like, all pretty good stuff. Like, all, I don't know, plus 200, plus 300. It was $10 to win 1,400.
Very good. But, so that one pushed.
Well.
So we go to a three-leg.
That's the thing, is as we're watching it.
Yeah.
Now, the claim was that at one point when it was 16-3, then Seattle pushed it to 23-13. The claim was that I blurted out, he's in really good shape. I don't do that. And I would swear in a Bible I didn't say that. It was someone at the bar who said it. So this is a very inside reference. But because I don't do that.
No.
I know enough from the wackadoos that I hang out with. So let's see. Paul Skeens over 7.5 strikeouts. Baltimore Ravens 2+ rushing touchdowns. Eagles minus 2.5. Yeah, so we had a plus 107, plus 428, plus 291, plus 217. So we're watching down the stretch, and the freaking Raiders tie it. And at that point, he's like, okay, there's no preseason. No overtime in preseason. So I get a push here. I get some of the ticket.
Yeah.
We watched the end of that game, and this long field goal attempt by Daniel Carson, like it was the biggest game in the history of the NFL. And I just thought to myself, I'm like, this is why football rules. Gambling is a big part of it, but that kind of passion at the end of the game. And then you heard the beginning of that cut with Kate Scott. We intentionally, our vast sound crew knows what they're doing, we intentionally left on the roar of the crowd, which was incredible. But I was going to put out a quick video because I was videoing the guy as the field goal was blocked, but I misstated what the bet was. So I'm like, I like to be accurate. I didn't want to get any feedback. Like, I don't know what the bet was. But, yeah, the bar exploded on his behalf because it was like, at least he got a push and at least he gets some of the money.
So you just said Eagles minus 2.5 on there. And that's why it's such a good plus price because the Bengals were favored. Right?
Yeah. I think that's why. He got plus 291 on Eagles minus 2.5.
Yeah, that's that. I mean, to do a reverse like that on a preseason game is pretty wild.
Well, he also got the Skeens K count by, a half a strikeout. There's no such thing. But he had to get in a lot of luck, a lot of good situations. And he got the Eagles. Now check that. He got the Seahawks to at least push. Luckily, in preseason, there's no overtime. So.
And it made for a fun story for all of you guys at the bar.
I don't think I've watched a preseason game with that much intention or intensity ever. So last night, the Raiders did not do well early in the game with the run game. And, I'll caution everyone. I probably should just be a jackass on the air. I kind of am anyway, but I probably should react to preseason like it's the end of the world, like many people do, and flip out today. Like, my position is Aston Genty sucks. I told you. Except I didn't tell anyone that. I said he's going to be good. I didn't think he should have been a top 10 pick, but I don't believe in running backs going in the top 10, but he's going to be good. But he got swallowed up multiple times last night, so people are melting down about that. Raiders are going to have to figure out a solution with Christian Wilkins out of the organization, what they're going to do at defensive tackle.
Right.
I know Pete Carroll talked about tackling itself, that it wasn't very good, and it was the first chance they got to tackle. One of the guys I like what Jamal Adams potentially can bring. You want to talk about a lunatic in a preseason game? Jamal Adams was so fired up to play against the Seahawks because, as we were told yesterday by one of the hosts in Seattle on KJR, Chuck Powell, he said the outside of maybe A-Rod, that this could be one of the more crazy returns of a former Seattle player, Jamal Adams. They hate Jamal Adams in Seattle.
Wow.
Well, because they feel like they got screwed on the deal. They gave up a first-round pick to the Jets, and Jamal Adams was a good player, but he was hurt all the time.
Yeah.
But you know what? For the Raiders, as a smaller option, kind of troublemaker blitz option, one of his years in Seattle, he did have, I think, double-digit sacks. In that role for the Raiders, he looked good last night playing linebacker.
One-year deal for him, right, with the Raiders?
Yep.
Just for Pete Carroll's first year and having some of his guys. Well, so that was the takeaway that you did like, and then also that they played hard all the way through the end.
They fought to the end. Do I go crazy? God, I have to relax on criticizing people when they get all geeked up over the preseason. But there was a tweet. I don't think it said that Cam Miller is unreal. It just gave his stats. He was the third stringer.
Yep.
I guess technically second. Well, he was third last night. Kid out of North Dakota State. He did look good. Good legs. He hooked up on a deep pass. So, but again, it's preseason. We've seen a lot of third string quarterbacks. I'll give you an example. In Dallas, Joe Milton's getting a lot of playing time now. Joe Milton for the Patriots was like the bee's knees. He was the next future star quarterback in the National Football League. Yeah. It's preseason.
Yeah. Now, Cam Miller, they drafted him with the intentions of him playing another position, right?
No, that was Tommy Mellott.
Oh,
Tommy Mellott was actually another FCS guy. Those guys went head-to-head. Mellott, I believe, was at Montana State. And Mellott did play wide receiver last night. He was wearing number 19. I know he caught at least one ball. He got swallowed up behind the line. But Cam Miller, they like him, and he may be in the running. At least he's as a sixth-rounder, he's going to make the team. But I'm not saying he's the future of the organization. I do think there's a little pressure on Aiden O'Connell to look a little better and look a little more efficient.
Right.
They don't have to have him as the backup quarterback. They could go outside the organization to get someone else. And Aiden O'Connell is not any of these guys' guy.
That was exactly the words that came out of my mouth yesterday watching that.
Like, the standard you have to reach is a little higher because the dudes who drafted you, they're not here anymore.
Right.
Coming up, I got to get a football hot take out from another radio show talking about Bill Belichick. It is one of the dumber things and least educated things I've heard in a while. It is not going to be easy for North Carolina football, but there's someone out there who thinks it is just because Belichick has been a great coach in the NFL. Okay.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
I'm lying in what I'm going to say here, but I'm just trying to make a point. I can't wait until Monday. Like, I wish we didn't have a weekend. We could just race right ahead to the Shedeur Sanders reaction from many people in the media and fans. He had a good first half, and the Browns are up 14-7. Now, that said, I'm completely lying. I have a big weekend set up, so I'm going to enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, you just said you have a reunion. Yeah, I'm sure you have some fun things planned. I'm going to enjoy relaxing because after this weekend, it's going to get crazy.
Yes.
A few more Aviators and then football. Hit the ground running.
You know, I always like to close out the show in fun fashion. That's the goal. Oftentimes, I don't do it because I'm just kind of very angry and bitter and ranty. I'm just going to play something. And I really like Colin Cowherd. But I have to say, I don't feel like everyone's ready for the football season. I don't think people have done research. I also think people are stretching themselves too thin and covering stories they don't know about. And maybe 99% of the audience will just accept this because it's a big name and it's a hot take. But Colin Cowherd was talking with Joel Klatt about Bill Belichick and the season that North Carolina can have. Fire this.
So Bill Belichick, the whole thing's weird. I'm kind of fascinated by it. They have really used the portal a lot. I don't love that.
Like, if you're Bill Belichick, don't you have to hit the portal to try to be competitive right away?
Okay, we stopped it there because what I've noticed with Colin is, and maybe it's just writers, and Colin, I'm not saying like they write everything for him, but Colin has come up with this narrative that Miami underachieved last year at the end of the season because Mario Cristobal had too many transfers. No, the story is they actually overachieved because they got an unbelievable transfer quarterback, and they've mined the transfer portal as well as anyone to get themselves back to expectations of 10 wins every year. But he has it stuck in his head that what happened at the end of the year, like, there was disorganization because all the transfers. Like, bruh, you're not in college football, and the impact that transfer portal can have on coaches who know what they're doing and bring in 25 or 30 new guys.
Yeah, that's a pretty crazy take right there.
He's wrong.
Right, he is wrong.
And one of the best stories at the Group of Five level is right here in town. UNLV would not have done under Barry Odom what it did, which was 20 wins from a program that traditionally averaged like 4 each year without the portal. They had 50-plus transfers on, or new players, probably 35-plus transfers each of the last 2 years, and Mullen is doing the same thing. If you know what you're doing, it can work. I understand the antiquated attitude on transfers, like, oh, the mix, and they must have been trouble somewhere else. Well, you know, do you want guys like that? Like, yes, you do. You do if you do it right. So now he goes on to, so his general thought, and you can already see what he's setting up here. If Belichick doesn't win, it's because he took too many transfers. And Joel Klatt's like, Joel Klatt should have said it. Colin, he wouldn't have a team. The team would suck without all the transfers. They needed the transfers. That's what happens when you're a first-year coach. Keep going.
Well, I think he is a much better coach than 99% of the coaches in college. I think if they get decent quarterback play, I looked at their schedule.
Yeah, the schedule's not daunting.
Oh, my, not daunting. I mean, if they just keep turnovers low, they should coach to 9 wins.
Stop. First of all, he's not a college football coach yet. He's not better than 99%. That's outrageous. And the other part of it is, coast to 9 wins. They're the 8th selection on the odds board in the ACC. They're 30-1 to win the conference. What do you mean they're going to? I shouldn't get worked up about this, but like, you're doing it on national radio because Belichick is the topic, but to like diss the rest of the ACC. Now, that said, if Colin comes in some future week and he's like, I bet $500,000 on the over wins and I bet $200,000 on them at 30-1 to win. Okay, you put win the ACC, you put your money where your mouth is.
True. But he's not going to do that.
No, he's not. Because the take is not really informed on Bill Belichick. They're not. They may surprise and have a good season. It is more likely they're going to win 6 or 7 games. And that's what the bookmakers are saying.